is The Fantasy Show with Sho Ali and Matt Marchese on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
It's Sunday morning, and you know what that means. It's time for The Fantasy Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Sho Ali, Matt Marchese with you today. Good morning, Canada. I hope you are all doing well early on a Sunday. We got a busy show for you today. Our last, actually, two-hour edition of the program until the summer. Next few weeks will be one-hour editions, but still, today is jam-packed. We have Haley McGoldrick from Sportsnet.ca stopping by in about an hour's time to chat some NFL draft prospects with us. And straight ahead, we will do some prognosticating when it comes to landing spots for some of our favorite NFL free agents. That's at the bottom of the hour. Don't forget, you can reach the show anytime to chime in at 590-590. Leave your name and location, please, as usual. Mr. Marchese, how are you this morning? Before we get to the events of last weekend, I just want to let you know, I personally stayed up to watch the Royal Rumble. And honestly, it was kind of sad. Like, honestly, I usually get kind of excited. Royal Rumble, second only to WrestleMania for me, but it's not great last night. I'll say that.
Yeah, I actually stayed up and watched it as well. And
come on.
It was, it wasn't great. It was okay, but I hate that it worked out better for me because I didn't end up staying up for the Roman Reigns and, Kevin Owens match, which was the main event. I don't like that they don't have the Royal Rumble as the main event, like the men's Royal Rumble as the main event. That's the staple, right? That's what it's named after. That is the event. That is the marquee matchup. And the fact that it was first, like I was trying to put my daughter down and I'm like, that sounds a lot like a lot of action going on my TV downstairs. And it turned out that the Royal Rumble was on and I think I missed like the first half hour of it. So it wasn't as good as I anticipated. I don't know how I know what happened in the last match, but I didn't watch it. So yeah, it was mildly disappointing. Not going to lie.
I didn't mind how the women's Royal Rumble ended in terms of like who won in terms of Ripley, but Cody Rhodes, I don't know. We don't have to get like super into the weeds on this, but I guess I'm used to, and I totally 1000% agree with you that the Royal Rumble itself should be like the marquee event, kind of how it ends, so to speak. But it was just kind of like for someone who's used to watching the event be like essentially one of two must watch WWE events in an entire calendar year or an entire like a 12 months period essentially. Because obviously it's early January. I don't know. It was kind of like underwhelming in the end. It feels like an odd thing to complain about because obviously there's going to be a lot of great football today and there was last weekend as well. But like in between, I think I got used to the kind of oddities of wrestling and then maybe I just forgot about it. I don't know. I'm fully expecting something weird to happen at WrestleMania.
Yeah, it's one of those that, I mean, listen, again, not to go too much into the weeds with this, but like some of the booking that has been done at WWE, I mean, when Triple H and Stephanie McMahon were running it, it was a totally different story. Vince McMahon is back, trying to sell it to Saudi Arabia, which is something. And it's not the same. Like sometimes the game passes people by and we see it in other walks of life, but it seems like in wrestling that it's kind of passed Mr. McMahon by a little bit. But I mean, maybe that was his choice, maybe it wasn't his choice last night, but yeah, underwhelming is probably the word that I would use. Yes.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned Vince McMahon, because one thing I thought after it was done was it did kind of smack of this is like a very like hello fellow kids type of moment when it came to
yes.
booking things
yes.
with McMahon, right? Like I think that is what it is. You're right, because if Triple H and Stephanie McMahon were still in charge, maybe that wouldn't be the case. But anyways, I digress. It was a kind of a strange event, but it's always nice to be able to watch that stuff on Sportsnet. But I look forward to WrestleMania as well. WrestleMania also, as a quick aside, Matt, in the last couple of years, primarily because of COVID, remember how like one of the first WrestleManias they did was without anyone in the audience? And I've long said that of almost any majorly watched sporting event. And I totally get that wrestling kind of straddles that line between like what is sport and what is like almost like a play to a certain degree, right? Because you kind of like know how it's going to end. But even so, plays kind of thrive off of the energy that they get, like the actors get from the audience. And it was kind of strange not to see during COVID audiences be present for wrestling matches. I mean, look, just look at the match that was, I mean, you're going way back now, but the match that was here in Toronto ages ago with the Rock and Hulk, because the crowd kind of turned on the Rock, right? And so you see that intrinsic relationship with wrestling more than any other sport, almost, I would say. But one of the things that came out of all that in COVID was like they had these like almost like SNL like digital short like movies essentially, right? So I wonder if they'll bring that back, honestly. If they do, or if they continue doing it, I'm all for it. I think that was a cool addition that was born essentially entirely out of COVID.
Well, yeah, one of them was the Undertaker versus AJ Styles where it was literally I know it's all a TV production, but a TV production outside of the actual event in the actual location. So, yeah, no, it's definitely interesting. I mean, they had something to that effect last night. Well, I mean, they did that weird match between Bray Wyatt and the LA Knight, the whatever it was, in the dark match. Right, that was something. Right. And to see Uncle Howdy jumping off of some scaffolding. Anyway. Yeah, it would be interesting. Listen, there's one thing that the WWE has done well, and it's provide entertainment value. And for people saying it's not a sport, you're right. It is all written ahead of time. We know that it's predetermined, but those are real athletes in there. Like, let's not forget that. And the bumps that they take are real. So let's hope that WrestleMania is a little bit better than the Royal Rumble was.
The Mountain Dew Pitch Black match.
Yeah, that's the one. That's the one. We're not sponsored by Mountain Dew, so we don't have to worry about it.
No. I do like Mountain Dew, though. Anyways, let's get to some of the football from last weekend. I'm kind of sorry. I was kind of actually wondering how today's show would go. I guess I'm thankful that the fantasy show is on Sundays and not on Mondays, because if it was, I have a feeling there would be a lot of bleeping. Austin would have his button on like the cuss button or the dump button, just to make sure you don't cuss too much. I am looking forward to the games today, and like I said, we will talk to Haley McGoldrick from Sportsnet.ca at the top of the next hour. We'll get into some of the NFL draft prospects and see what some of the best landing spots are. And at the bottom of this hour, in about 25 minutes, we'll take a look at some of the landing spots, preferred landing spots, fantasy wise, for some of our favorite NFL free agents. But looking back to last weekend, specifically to last Sunday, because we did a lot of the last Saturday games on this show last weekend, but, you know, Bills, Bengals, 49ers, Cowboys, Bills getting just waxed by the Bengals, 27-10. I did take, at the behest of some of our coworkers, Bengals +6. So I was, needless to say, I was happy that paid off. But Marchese, I'm sure you were not super impressed with the performance of your beloved Buffalo Bills.
Well, no, I mean, I don't ever want to question the effort level of any professional athlete, but it just looked like something was missing. You know, DeMar Hamlin was in the building. You would have thought that would have been that extra edge, right? You'd think that when that happens, you're like, okay, the Bills are really going to show up here. And frankly, I thought that the game plan, both on defense and offense, was horrible. Like, the Bengals are missing three offensive linemen. So, in theory, what you should be doing is jamming receivers at the line of scrimmage so that they can't create separation on any quick routes, and that gives Joe Burrow, you know, the 2 seconds that he needs to throw the ball. Does that work every time? No. But on that first drive, that was kind of the indicator of how the game was going to go. The Bills offered absolutely zero pushback, and the Bengals they basically walked the ball down the field and scored on the first drive. And I looked at the people that were at my house, and I said, this is going to be a long game, because if that's the game plan on the first drive, then you're in deep trouble. And it turns out that they were in deep trouble. It was not pretty. They couldn't get to Joe Burrow, partially because he was given the amount of time needed to make quick passes. And when he did have time that he didn't need to make a quick pass, the coverage was blown seemingly every time. So defensively, I thought the game plan was horrible. Offensively, and so just like you've seen enough Buffalo Bills football that there was a point that third down seemed to be automatic, right? It was, you know, when Cole Beasley in his first stint with the Bills, it was, you know, they would get the ball to Cole Beasley. He would get his 4 or 5 yards that was needed on third down. What felt like happened a lot in that game against the Bengals last weekend was they needed 4 or 5 yards and they were trying to get 20. And I don't know why you brought Cole Beasley back if that's not the role that he was going to play. And I felt that they got away from that quick passing game, much like what the Bengals were doing to beat the Bills seemingly all game. They didn't do that when they needed to. So my thought process on it is let's get our 4 or 5, get first down, and then we can take our deep shot on first or second down on the next series of downs. But that didn't happen. I do wonder about Josh Allen's elbow and how much, like he said, it wasn't bothering him, but he's probably going to say that. Like he's not going to use it as an excuse. They weren't good enough, period. And I don't think that that's going to be a talking point for Josh Allen anyway. I do wonder about how bad the elbow injury was, because there were a lot of throws over the course of the year after he got hurt that he was not making, so that he would normally make. So that to me is a storyline. But there's going to be some changes. You know, when Sean McDermott says that he's been outcoached again in the playoffs, like that to me is a problem. I'm not saying he's going to be gone, but certainly there needs to be a conversation going forward about what this team looks like and how they maybe prepare for games.
Well, there we go. Josh Allen, 25 of 42, 264 yards, no touchdowns through the air, and an interception. And the lone touchdown the Bills scored on the ground was a Josh Allen rushing touchdown. It was just interesting because I feel like the Bills' offense all year had hummed along pretty nicely. After the Josh Allen elbow injury, obviously, like, you know, things went a little awry, but, I mean, hard not to when your star quarterback gets injured. But it was just odd because I felt like all year Ken Dorsey, who was their offensive coordinator, Bills' offensive coordinator, had been praised for the evolution of the offense after Brian Daboll left for New York, and it looked pretty good all year. And then in the last couple of games, and specifically against the Dolphins and specifically against the Bengals, obviously in the playoffs, it just looked like they had decided to just all of a sudden try and do everything through, and you mentioned it, through picking up large chunks of yardage at a time instead of methodically working the ball down the field when they themselves had seen it with the Dolphins and the Bengals. Like that's how both those teams took their shots as well, and it largely worked out for them. But, I mean, and again, like in this game, when you see, you know, Jordan Poyer and teammates collide and go down in the end zone, like that's never great, right? The friendly fire and they both get injured and both have to leave the field, and you're still being asked to cover Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins and Boyd and so on and so forth. Like, I get it. Like, it's not an easy task. So defense had their hands full as well. But, like, how much of the blame falls on Ken Dorsey? And how, like, I mean, can you ask that guy to shoulder much of it, given that this is year one of his tenure as the Bills offensive coordinator? In a year, they still finished as the AFC's number 2 overall seed?
You know, it's an interesting question because here's where I think some blame lies. You know, they brought in James, they drafted James Cook, they traded for Nyheim Hines, and they were using at least James Cook down the stretch, and it worked. I would be shocked if he didn't at least have 50% of the snaps in that Bengals game, but the reason why you brought James Cook and Nyheim Hines is that they have a specific skill set, and that is to catch the ball. And we did not see the Bills throw to their running backs a lot. The Bengals defensive line was getting after Josh. Like, they were getting to Josh Allen, or at least near Josh Allen. So what's the best way to alleviate some of the pressure from the pass rush? Well, run a screen. And I didn't see them run They barely ran any bubble screens to wide receivers. They almost didn't throw at all to their running back. So Nyheim Hines was essentially, you know, he was taken, brought in to be a kick returner. And last time I checked, like, yeah, sure, that helps, but that shouldn't be the reason why you brought him in. And so I just thought that the game planning in terms of how they were using the running backs was an issue, especially because they couldn't get the ball downfield. There were points in the year where they weren't using Stephon Diggs to the extent that you probably would have liked them to, which is probably where a lot of his frustration came from, especially in the playoff game there. But yeah, I know it's his first year. Listen, Ken Dorsey did enough that he was getting at least the Carolina Panthers head coaching job. He got an interview for it. Now, ultimately, he didn't get it, but I don't see Ken Dorsey going anywhere after 1 year. I think that the offense moved along okay during the season. At some points, it looked really good. I think it becomes a question of personnel at this point, Show. Like, and what do they do to enhance Josh Allen's talent by bringing in, you know, another really good wide receiver? Like, do they believe that Gabe Davis is still the answer? There was a lot of inconsistencies in his game. But in the playoffs, he looks decent. Seems to happen every single year. So I do wonder about them bringing in a slot receiver unless they're sold on Khalil Shakir, which he looked good in the playoffs, made some really nice catches. And the run game, I don't think Devin Singletary is going to be back. So it's going to be James Cook. And I would anticipate they bring in a bruising back. And dare I say, Show, and it's not one of my five players that I have, but if Ezekiel Elliott gets cut, I do wonder if the Bills take a flyer on a one-year deal on Ezekiel Elliott as that more physical back that they don't have.
This is not one of mine that we'll do in about 15 minutes either, but I wouldn't mind seeing someone, let's just say for the sake of argument that Devin Singletary is gone and they need someone to pair with James Cook, I wouldn't mind David Montgomery being the guy to go into Buffalo. Like, that's someone I think who is, I mean, and then, like, just on the flip side of that, seeing someone like Khalil Herbert kind of largely take the reins in Chicago, which would be great, I think, but for fantasy purposes. But I agree with you. Any big-ish name, I don't know if it ends up being, like, it could be Miles Sanders, it could be David Montgomery, it could be Josh Jacobs, for all we know, it could be Zeke, right? Who knows? There are a lot of free agent running backs this year, and I think any one of them would be pretty well-suited. I was going to say best suited, but pretty well-suited to being James Cook's running mate in the backfield in Buffalo. But like you said, Devin Singletary, 6 carries for 25 yards. Cook had 5 carries for 13 yards. And the receiver that had the most catches, well, tied for the most catches and the most yards through the air was Dawson Knox. He had 5 catches for 65 yards. Devin Singletary actually had 5 catches for 37 yards, but Stephon Diggs, 4 catches for 35 yards. That also kind of tells the story to a lesser degree of just in terms of how Stephon Diggs kind of disappeared from games, not really through any fault of his own. I mean, he was obviously being double covered a lot of the time for a lot of these games towards the end of the year, but I want to say right before the fantasy playoffs started, Stephon Diggs was the number one wide receiver in the entire league, entire NFL in most formats. I'm not sure if it was quite the same in standard because you and I play mostly in half and full PPR leagues, but he was the number one wide receiver. And then going into the fantasy playoffs, I would say he definitely disappointed in the fantasy championship weekend. I remember Faisal texting in to us saying, you know, should I bench Diggs? And he did. And I'm sure a lot of people who did not bench Diggs probably got burned by it because Diggs did not have a good last couple weeks of the season fantasy-wise. And then here in the NFL playoffs, much the same story, again, because they seem to just go away from him in the second half. So I would tend to agree with you. I don't think Ken Dorsey is going anywhere, but I do wonder if they tweak it a little bit because there was that big story, like you said, about how Diggs, you know, stormed out of the locker, grabbed all his things and stormed out of the locker room. I don't really think that's like a diva thing. I just think that he was clearly emotional after a big loss at home of all places. So I'm not like super worried about the Diggs-Bills relationship, but I do agree with you that there's probably going to be some personnel changes, whether it's Gabe Davis, whether it's another running back, another wide receiver, whatever, maybe through the draft as well, maybe through free agency. We'll have to see. But I think that's always an interesting aspect. On the Bengals side of things, again, as the winners, and they are playing later today, and we'll get to Bengals-Chiefs at the bottom of the next hour, but Burrow, 23 of 36, he went for 242 yards, two touchdowns through the air. Joe Mixon did a great job on the ground, 20 carries for 105 yards. He averaged 5.2 yards a carry, had a touchdown on the ground as well, and Ja'Marr Chase, Hayden Hurst, and Samaje Perine, all with five catches. Chase had 61 yards for a touchdown, Hurst had 59 yards for a touchdown, and Samaje Perine had 31 yards as well as 33 yards on the ground. Let's quickly get to 49ers-Cowboys, Matt, and take a look at some of these matchups here. This was actually a defensive matchup for pretty much the entire game. And we don't have to get into like the nitty-gritty necessarily, but when the 49ers needed a touchdown, they went to Christian McCaffrey, and when it counted, he managed to get one in. That ends up being the decisive score. And then at the end of the game, probably the play that has been the most discussed for ages. I know Pat McAfee was saying that this play at the end of the game with Ezekiel Elliott snapping the ball and then throwing it to Turpin, who gets absolutely wiped out by the 49ers defense. I think it was Jimmy Ward who like plants him into the turf at the very end of the game. I think McAfee was saying that that play should replace like that weird like swinging gate play against the Patriots from a number of years ago, or like even when the Washington team on Monday Night Football had their own version of the swinging gate play, that this should maybe top it. I mean, undoubtedly, it was a weird way to end the game. Like, I get what they were trying to do and just get a receiver in space with like a bunch of screen guys around him, but it's kind of remarkable that for the second straight year, like, once again, the Dallas Cowboys finished their season on, like, truly one of the most absurd ways to end a game.
Yeah, and that play, like, to me, like, okay, if you want Ezekiel Elliott and Dak Prescott to be the guys taking the laterals, at least at the start, why did you line up offensive linemen on each side of the field? Yeah, like, at that point, throw it outside and let the big men block. At least get yourself down the field and maybe a penalty happens or something. Like, take your chance. And it was just... I didn't think the Cowboys were going to win that game. I thought the Niners were going to win fairly handily, to be honest with you. But the way that the Cowboys went out, like, their defense did enough. Their defense largely kept Brock Purdy and the rest of the offense in check. And so it's on Dak Prescott to have a good game. In that, he didn't have to have a great game. He just had to have a good game. And I don't blame him for the last play of the game, obviously, because that's what they called for. It was ridiculous. But Dak Prescott throws interceptions again in a big game, and they're on the hook for a lot of money going forward. Like, Dak's number goes up over $40 million next year. And, you know, we talk about Ezekiel Elliott maybe having to move on. Like, I expect that he is a cap casualty. But other guys are going to suffer for it, too. Like, this is why it's so imperative to win when your quarterback is on a cheaper deal. Because, as we know, they're going to take up the majority of they're going to take up a large chunk of the salary. And they're, like, we look at, you know, like, the Chiefs, they've got a chance to win with Pat Mahomes not on his rookie deal. Joe Burrow still on his rookie deal. Jalen Hurts still on his rookie deal. Brock Purdy is Mr. Irrelevant. Like, when you look at the four teams that are remaining, that's the recipe for success for the most part. And the Dallas Cowboys really have to do some soul searching here. Like, Dak Prescott's not going anywhere. But because he's not going anywhere, you better figure out how to build around him. Like, is CeeDee Lamb and Michael Gallup and T.Y. Hilton a good enough trio of receivers to win the NFC? I mean, probably not. So they need to bring in another body. They probably need to bring in a slot receiver. Ezekiel Elliott's going to be gone. So does that mean that they're going to try and franchise tag Tony Pollard and he's going to be the guy going forward, and maybe they supplement him with, you know, a bigger body back, like maybe a James Robinson type, that's, you know, grind out those short yard situations, whatever. They've got a lot of questions, And I'm not sure that the guys in charge have the answers to this problem, because they seem to be making the same stupid mistakes every single year.
Yeah, I go back to the whole idea about personnel, because, yeah, I tend to agree with you. I do really wonder where the Dallas Cowboys go from here. Again, you're kind of tied to Dak unless you really make a huge trade, and we all know about all the deadlines, about dead money. So even if they were to somehow manifest some kind of massive trade, you'd still be on the hook for like millions and millions of dollars in the first number of years of this deal. So it's a fascinating conundrum to have. I mean, in the end, CeeDee Lamb, 10 catches, 117 yards, but it's true. I mean, even Dalton Schultz, I do think, is a nice weapon. 5 catches, 27 yards, and a touchdown. And we know that, from fantasy purposes, certainly, that Dak Prescott trusts few other players like he trusts Dalton Schultz in the red zone. But Dalton Schultz is a free agent. Tony Pollard is a free agent. He had 6 carries for 22 yards. The run game just overall was not that productive. He had 22 yards. Elliott had 26 yards on the ground. Dak Prescott himself had 22 yards, 4 rushes for 22 yards. So it's just, it's true. There's not a lot of immediate, obvious solutions. I mean, this is a team that signed T.Y. Hilton off the street like a couple of weeks before the end of the season, and it's not that, to no one's surprise, that made pretty much no real difference. So it's a fascinating conundrum to me, especially from a fantasy point, because obviously CeeDee Lamb, Dak Prescott not going anywhere, but like, what does the Dallas Cowboys run game, a run game that was super effective, look like next year? Tony Pollard, obviously a big part of that, and he actually is one of my 5 guys we'll talk about in a couple of minutes, Matt, when we talk about preferred landing spots for free agents. We'll get to that in a sec, but real quick, 49ers, Brock Purdy, like you said, Mr. Irrelevant, which is a tag that maybe should go away now because he has played pretty well. Was it his best game since becoming the starting quarterback for San Francisco? No, obviously no. The guy had 10 incompletions, 19-29. He threw for 214 yards, no touchdowns. But he also didn't turn the ball over, and against a pretty lethal Dallas Cowboys defense, a defense that managed to keep an offense that has guys like Christian McCaffrey, George Kittle, Deebo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk in check for large chunks of the game. I know George Kittle still did his damage, and he had that just a ridiculous catch where he like bobbled the ball for like 10 seconds, it felt like, and he still came down with it. That was honestly maybe the most impressive individual play of the whole playoffs so far, but despite those guys all being kept largely in check, Brock Purdy did the one thing he was asked to do, which is not go out there and like torch the Cowboys and like rip up their defense through the air, but was not turn the ball over. He didn't do that. And honestly, like, I know this sounds so obvious, but you know when you look at the, it's like Tony Romo's keys to the game, the keys to for the 49ers to beat the Eagles later tonight will literally just be the exact same thing. Brock Purdy, do not turn the ball over, and one of your talented teammates will probably find a way to win.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny because Brock Purdy was a good quarterback in college, but I mean, nobody had him starting playoff games as a rookie. That I can almost guarantee you. What it does show us is that not only do the Niners know what they're doing in terms of picking up talent, but it also shows that Kyle Shanahan knows what he's doing in his offensive game planning. He doesn't put his quarterback in situations where he's going to turn the ball over. Now, are there opportunities for the quarterback to turn the ball over despite the play calling? Absolutely, and I get that. But Kyle Shanahan's not putting his quarterback in that same scenario. Like, do we not think that if, I mean, Trey Lance is a different story because Trey Lance is a totally different quarterback and the game planning is different. But if Jimmy Garoppolo is the quarterback of this team, do we not see them in the exact same spot?
Yeah, I think they probably, more than likely, yes, I would say.
So Brock Purdy's done a good job. What Brock Purdy has done is put himself in the conversation to start football games for this team next year, regardless of what happens with Trey Lance. Because they may look at that and say, you know what, that was a mistake. And despite the fact that we gave up a lot of draft capital to get Trey Lance, we've still gone to back-to-back NFC championship games. And maybe in this case, maybe this year, they get to the Super Bowl. But that's a real conversation that they're having. The Niners are super interesting because I think that this game, as good as both defenses have been, I do wonder if this is a high-scoring game because the Eagles at points have given up some points. The Niners secondary has given up points. And, you know, we could say, like, Dallas's offense was good, but they're not Philadelphia Eagles good. And I do believe that the Niners are going to have to put up points to stay and keep pace with the Eagles. And maybe more opportunities for Brock Purdy to turn the ball over, because they're going to have to take some shots downfield. They're going to have to take some chances. I expect this to be it'll be a fun game today. But yeah, Brock Purdy has been a lot better than I think anybody could have envisioned that he would be.
Yeah, 49ers, Eagles later tonight, as will be Bengals and Chiefs. We'll see those two games in the NFC and AFC championship games, respectively, a little later on today. Obviously, we'll break it all down on the fantasy show next week as well. Straight ahead, we will discuss the preferred, favorite, maybe, landing spots for some of the biggest NFL free agents. I don't know about you, man. I focused largely on offense. I mean, like, I am in a couple of IDP leagues, but I largely focus on offense just because I can't imagine many of our listeners aren't too many IDP leagues. Obviously, if you are and you want to hear some of that, you can always text us at 590-590, leave your name and location. But we'll step aside to take a very quick break. When we come back, we will get to preferred free agents, landing spots for free agents in the NFL free agency class for 2023. And at the top of the next hour, Haley McGoldrick will join us from Sportsnet.ca. But you're listening to The Fantasy Show, Show and Matt, on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Welcome back to the Fantasy Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Show Ali, Matt Marchese here with you until 10 a.m. Eastern for another three segments. Obviously, we are here breaking down all of things NFL as the fantasy football is largely over. Next week, we actually go to one-hour shows. So if you want to reach us at 590-590, name and location, please. Next week, and then the morning of the Super Bowl, we will start at 9 a.m. Eastern. So we appreciate you guys being alongside us all season long. I don't know about you, Matt. I can't believe, I've said this a million times about a million things, and I will continue to do so for the rest of my life, but I can't believe how fast things sneak up on you. You know what I mean? Like, like we're already here on a Sunday in which it is AFC NFC Championship Sunday weekend, right? It's like we've been talking about Patrick Mahomes' ankle all week, the most covered ankle since the moon landing, essentially, right? And you're looking at all these different things, and is Jalen Hurts going to advance to his first Super Bowl? Is it going to be Brock Purdy? If the 49ers return, is Jimmy G going to suit up in the Super Bowl? But yeah, like, it's crazy to think that it's actually, like, I remember, it feels like it was just yesterday we were talking about, like, who should go number one overall, Jonathan Taylor or Christian McCaffrey, and in a couple of days, it will be February.
I know it. What they say, the days are long, but the months and the years are short, and that's kind of what it feels like. I know I just got really philosophical on everybody, but especially with the football season, because it is so short in terms of how many weeks in comparison to the other three major sports. You know, baseball is a lot of games in a short period of time, but it's a lot of games. The NBA, you know, starts up usually at the end of October, early November, and finishes in the summertime. The same thing goes for the NHL, early October, and then they go until, you know, basically till the end of June. And so the football season, you know, September, I mean, the NFL is an all year round thing, and it's, believe me, I love it. And I love that the season is short because every game means something. But man, it is too short for us to talk about, right? Like, it really is too short to the point you're like, man, as soon as the Super Bowl finishes, you're like, well, I already miss it because, you know, we're going to start talking about, you know, it goes from Super Bowl and then we got, like, you know, a 2-3 week break. Then there's free agency, then there's the draft, then there's rookie camp, then there's OTAs, then there's training camps, on and on and on. It's a full 365 day a year cycle, but it's way too short in terms of the season. So that's why it gives us a lot of time to come up with a bunch of nonsense.
Exactly. That's our specialty, nonsense, here on the Fantasy Show. It's funny. It is true. The NFL has basically made the calendar into a year-round one, like you were saying. And, I mean, it's the day after the Super Bowl. It's like who's getting cut post-Super Bowl before the new league year starts, or who's getting cut after the new league year starts. And then, of course, the combine is always a fun thing that has brought just a whole whack of media coverage with, like, how fast guys run and how high they can jump, and then the actual draft themselves. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Speaking of the draft, we will chat with Haley McGoldrick from Sportsnet.ca. She does a great job covering not only the WNBA, but also college football. So she has a wealth of knowledge as to the top prospects, and we'll pick her brain on some of the year's top prospects. I am curious to get Haley's perspective on, you know, the idea of what this draft is in the end known for, because last year, the draft, I think going into the 2022 draft, I should say, it was kind of known that a lot of the top wide receivers would probably go in the first round, and they did for the most part. So I am curious to see if there is something like that the 2023 draft is known for. We'll chat with Haley in about 20 minutes. But right now, I did say we would get to some of the preferred free agency landing spots for some big guys. I admit I went boring with this guy. We'll start. I don't want to get to the QBs right away, because we've talked a lot about them, but I'll get to the. I have two QBs on my list of five here, but I wanted to start with a wide receiver, because one of the big, I guess, big-ish non-playoff news, Matt, of the past, I guess, what, 7 days, has been that Bill O'Brien is making his return to New England. He is going to be the offensive coordinator for the Patriots after a stint in, well, certainly in all the work he did in Houston as the coach and the GM, probably a better coach than he is a GM, I dare say. But after getting fired, obviously went to go coach for Nick Saban and Alabama, and I do not believe he did coach Mac Jones in the end. I think they overlapped maybe by a month or two, but not during the actual season. So Mac Jones getting drafted into the NFL like just a month or something after Bill O'Brien was hired by Saban in Alabama, but he is making his return to New England, so there is some lingering familiarity there. Jacoby Myers is the guy I'm interested in, and honestly, I think my preferred landing spot in free agency is the New England Patriots, because he doesn't have a lot of physical tools, Jacoby Myers, and he is predominantly a slot receiver. He is more than that, I think. He logged a little more than one-third of his snaps out wide, but I don't know. He doesn't drop the ball a lot. He's 6'2". He's a little over 200 pounds, so he can make contested catches, and he has chemistry with Mac Jones. So if you want to see a revamped New England offense that I'm sure will include Ramondre Stevenson, as he was probably the definition of a league winner right up until the end this past season. I would love to see what Myers looks like in a Bill O'Brien system with Mac Jones throwing him the ball, because we just haven't been able to see a lot of continuity in New England since Mac Jones was drafted.
No, and I agree with that. And there's going to be some more changes. Like Nelson Agholor is a free agent. You got to wonder about what the rest of that receiving core looks like. And if maybe, God forbid, they can actually draft a wide receiver that is of some relevance. I know that's very difficult for Bill Belichick to do. But it's funny that you had Jacoby Myers back to the New England Patriots, because I actually had Jacoby Myers on my list as well.
Okay.
And it was to the Buffalo Bills. Okay. I like Khalil Shakir. Myers is the perfect fit in the slot for the Bills. He's even better than Cole Beasley was, I believe, when Cole Beasley made his first stint with the Bills. And I think that he's a really good fit for Josh Allen, giving him another weapon. He's pretty sure-handed. He actually got into the end zone a bunch this year, which was a total surprise after not registering a touchdown previous. But I think he's a good fit. Listen, Jacoby Myers is a good fit on a lot of teams. And you're right. He is a good fit back with the New England Patriots, because we've seen the success he's had. But I think that he may be one of the key pieces that the Buffalo Bills are missing. Here's the only thing. Jacoby Myers is going to get paid this year, because when we look at the free agent class, it's not great. It's just okay.
Yeah. It's a relatively weak free agent wide receiver class. And then you add in guys who can be drafted out of college there are some pretty big names, some pretty good names that can probably be available with a maybe not the same draft capital that like a a Drake London or a Garrett Wilson cost you, which was like upper end of the first round, you could probably get some of the better wide receivers lower middle half of the first round. So if that's the case, maybe the Bills can just draft a wide receiver. Maybe the Patriots can draft a wide receiver. Now that we have shocked you, dear listener, in saying that I picked the Patriots as a team for Jacoby Myers to go to, and Matt picked the Bills. What a shock that is for both of us. I want to get to the landing spots, a couple of QBs. For me, I have Lamar Jackson and Tom Brady on this list. And I know that Harbaugh and DaCosta and everyone from A to Z has said that Lamar Jackson is going to be a Baltimore Raven in 2023. I believe they are trying. I do genuinely believe that. I don't know if I believe it's actually going to happen in the end, right? I honestly do think that Lamar Jackson is looking for a contract in which he gets paid like $200 million guaranteed. That's what he's looking for. And he is already an MVP. He's still relatively young. Like, I think if you compare Lamar Jackson's age to Stetson Bennett, for example, I'm pretty sure Lamar Jackson is still younger than Stetson Bennett, and he's already been in the NFL for like however many years and won an MVP, and Stetson Bennett is just leaving college. Like, I know it's a unique situation with Bennett specifically, but I just found that kind of funny. But either way, if we're picking a new destination for Lamar Jackson, I would love, Matt, to see Lamar Jackson. I say this knowing that you are a Bills fan, that I am a Patriots fan. I would love to see him land with the Jets. I honestly think that the New York Jets, again, like, to say a team is just a QB away is like one of the biggest sports cliches you could possibly engage in, because how many times have we said that? yeah, it is, right? But and we've said that a lot about a lot of teams in the last, like, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 years. You'll probably say it again about many teams going forward. But Lamar Jackson to the Jets would just, I think, complete that team in a fascinating way. It would largely depend on who is the offensive coordinator there, obviously, as it usually does. But like the team has Garrett Wilson, Elijah Moore, who didn't just magically become bad overnight. Tyler Conklin, we know he likes to throw to his tight ends. Breece Hall, he already has been working with a very talented running back in J.K. Dobbins. They've both been productive in Baltimore. So no reason Hall can't be productive if Lamar Jackson was the guy in New York. I'm not sure that's going to happen, because the Jets would have to commit a long period of time and a lot of money, a lot of dollars to Lamar Jackson. But boy, like, I have every confidence that Jackson can command a pro-style offense as he did when he was in college at Louisville. And I think he can do it in New York.
So I don't disagree. I went a little bit off the board with this, but it's with the same team. So I went with a trade as opposed to free agency.
Okay,
all right. That trade is Aaron Rodgers to the Jets.
Ooh.
Now, when we talk about – now, you could make the argument that, as a whole, the Jets' weapons would be better than anything that Aaron Rodgers has had over the course of his career with the Green Bay Packers. You could make the case. Now, do they have a Devontae Adams? No, but Garrett Wilson's pretty good. Is Elijah Moore better than, you know, a lot of guys that the Packers have had? Yes, Elijah Moore is good. You're right. He did not become bad overnight. The running backs. I even lump Michael Carter into that conversation, especially the way that we saw Green Bay use two running backs in Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon. I think that that is just the perfect landing spot. And ho-hum, by the way, Nathaniel Hackett is the offensive coordinator with the New York Jets, who was the offensive coordinator when Aaron Rodgers won back-to-back MVPs. So there is a fit there. I think either of those guys going to the Jets totally changes that AFC East. Like, not, I know that's very obvious to say, but I agree with you. Like, the Jets become a really interesting team if they can get a quarterback that has some semblance of being good.
Man, I am so fascinated to see where all the Jets get drafted next year fantasy-wise, because I almost feel like if any halfway competent QB, whether it's Lamar Jackson, who obviously is more than halfway competent, whether it's Aaron Rodgers, I don't think Rodgers is washed. I think he was injured this year, and he'll be healthier next year, whether he plays for the Packers or for the Jets or for anyone else. But even if you take those two guys out of it, if there is just a normally talented quarterback who is suiting up for the Jets, I honestly feel like we're going to have the same conversation about all of those guys, Hall, Conklin, Moore, Garrett Wilson, certainly, basically like we did the Denver Broncos this year. And I'm not trying to like put the bad juju on the Jets, certainly, because I was pretty heavily invested across many different leagues in a variety of Denver Broncos, like whether it was Javonte Williams, who obviously didn't finish the season with an injury, whether it was Jerry Jeudy, whether it was Cortland Sutton, whether it was Russell Wilson himself, right? Like a lot of these guys were relatively highly drafted. And I would say even Jerry Jeudy, who was probably the most consistent of them by the end of it, even he disappointed because the entire offense disappointed. I can't help but think that that's the kind of boost we will see for virtually every Jet, depending on who gets the signing at QB for Gangrene next year.
So here's the prime example of that.
Okay,
how much would the Jets draft stock improve if Jared Goff was their quarterback?
Boy,
right?
Yeah,
You're talking about a guy who is a competent quarterback. He actually proved to be more than competent this year, but one of those that, you know, you thought, oh, okay, this is, you know, maybe they'll be okay. And Jared Goff ended up being really good for them. What if Brock Purdy or Jimmy Garoppolo was the quarterback of the New York Jets? We'd be having an entirely different conversation.
Or like Derek Carr. What if Derek Carr was the QB of the New York Jets?
I don't know if I can do that one again. He had Devontae Adams, and he made him look bad. I don't know.
Well, see, it makes you wonder because, I mean, look, I'm not gonna make excuses for Derek Carr. He looked bad for a lot of the season, but he also, if he gets paired with the Jets and what is a very, very good defense, I have a hard time believing that he would be any worse than like Zach Wilson was this year. But I mean,
it'd be
difficult to do that. But then again, it's probably possible. So I don't know. I'm hoping the Jets aim higher than Derek Carr. I mean, look, I have a lot of love for Jimmy G. I hope they aim higher than Jimmy G. I'll say that. I am hoping, even if it's not Lamar Jackson or Aaron Rodgers, I hope they make some kind of splash. And we have seen the Jets do this. It would be something to see the Jets kind of go down the same road, the Brett Favre road, right? Like get a former Packers QB to be their guy, and then, which basically means that if Aaron Rodgers plays for the Jets, that it's all but set in stone that once Kirk Cousins retires, he will go on to play for the Minnesota Vikings and probably have a great deal of success there with Justin Jefferson. But I digress. Before we go, we have a couple more minutes here. I wanted to get to a couple more of your free agent ones. I have a Tom Brady destination on this, but I want to know, unless you have a couple other ones that are a little more off the board, because I didn't expect you to also say Jacoby Myers, so why don't you hit me, Matt, with whatever's left on your preferred landing spots for NFL free agents?
Okay, this one will never happen, but it would be fun just because, and I'll get to my other ones because this one will be quick. Saquon Barkley to the Eagles. And the reason is, imagine Saquon Barkley running behind that offensive line. Like, look what Miles Sanders did this year. Imagine what Saquon Barkley would do. I don't even know if Philadelphia can fit it under the cap, but that would be fun to watch. Like, if he goes to the Eagles, you could make the case that he's the first player picked off the board. Here's a couple of the off the board ones. DJ Chark to the Giants. I anticipate that the Giants are going to draft a receiver. They're going to go along with Wandale Robinson, who looked really good before he got hurt. But the Giants are going to pay Daniel Jones here. They're talking about maybe paying Daniel Jones upwards of $40 million. And if you're going to do that, you better get some receivers to get him some help to make it worth your while. DJ Chark really shone late in the year with the Lions. And again, with quarterback play that you're kind of like, okay, Jared Goff is good. And we didn't think he could support two fantasy relevant wide receivers. And it ended up that he could. So I think that DJ Chark would be a good field stretcher for this team. Like, Isaiah Hodgins showed that he was competent, and I think DJ Chark is that much better and what he could do in that offense. And then my last one that I had was Mike Gesicki to the Lions. Now, the Lions need a tight end because they traded away TJ Hockenson and they almost made the playoffs. Mike Gesicki is one of those physical freaks that you would hope would go to an offense where they would use him, because let's face it, the last 2 years in Miami have been a bit of a disaster for Mike Gesicki. And especially this year, where he had less than 400 receiving yards, he's way too talented to be used so sparingly. They use him to block a lot. That wasn't his MO coming out of college. He wasn't a great blocker. He is of the same kind of mold as like a Kyle Pitts in that he's a physical freak, but you don't need him to block, nor should you have him block. And I think that Mike Gesicki would be a nice little fit in that offense on a one-year prove-it deal with the Lions. I think that if Mike Gesicki were to go to the Lions, he would be kind of in that sleeper conversation, much like Evan Engram was this past year.
I like the Gesicki one because you're right. I've long said that if he was a featured tight end, and it was the same conversation we had about Dallas Goedert before Zach Ertz left Philadelphia, you know, to Arizona via trade. So if that, you know, you see the results, the dividends that have been paid for the Philadelphia offense because Dallas Goedert has been very, very, very good. Much in the same way, like if Mike Gesicki ever became the featured tight end on an offense like Gronk was, or like Travis Kelce was, or like to a certain degree Dalton Schultz has been at times, at the very least, or Dallas Goedert has been, I agree with you. I think fantasy-wise, that would be so much fun to watch. Also because, like as we always say, it's like a complete wasteland out there when it comes to tight ends. So if Mike Gesicki could be the guy, and maybe the gritty would look pretty good in Detroit as well. My last one real quick, I had Tony Pollard heading to the Miami Dolphins. Nothing against the Dallas Cowboys by any means. If he goes to resigns in Dallas, I'm sure he'll be just as fantasy relevant as he was this year. But I would love to see Pollard, who is a dynamic receiving weapon, just a dynamic weapon in general, right? He had over 31 explosive rushes, which is the sixth most in the NFL. Despite the fact that he was the number two back for like most of the year, he's just like, he is a home run waiting to happen every time he sets foot on a football field. And if he gets paired up with Mike McDaniel, who obviously comes from the Kyle Shanahan system, I honestly really do think that it's going to be, he's going to thrive. Like, I know the Mike McDaniel system has obviously used a bunch of different running backs over the past couple of years, even when he was the running game coordinator in San Fran, but he's also dealt with a whole ton of injuries. And as we've seen, when he has one guy who is healthy, that guy has taken the reins and produced a boatload of fantasy numbers, that guy mostly being Raheem Mostert over the past couple of years in San Fran and now in Miami. But if the guy was Tony Pollard, like, there's no disrespect to Raheem Mostert, but I think the ceiling for Mostert, or pardon me, for Pollard is a little higher than Mostert. So I would love to see the Miami Dolphins as a landing spot for Pollard.
Oh, 100%. And I mean, not like for fantasy purposes, yes. For purposes of playing the Buffalo Bills, no, I would not like that. Yeah. But Tony Pollard he would be, like, when you talk about a home run waiting to happen, we saw that with the Dallas Cowboys. And frankly, I don't think that the play calling in Dallas is anything special or creative. I think they would use Tony Pollard properly. How about that? They would use him to his strengths in Miami. And that's scary because he was really good this year. The only question is the offensive line good enough to make Tony Pollard a little bit better? And I'm not so certain that that's the case in Miami. I would love to know what your Tom Brady landing spot was.
Oh, I had him landing with the Raiders. I would love to see him play for the Vegas Raiders. Is the defense great? No. Is it like certainly as good as maybe the Patriots defense would be, or the 49ers defense would be, or even the Bucks defense would be if he decided to go back there? No, that's definitely true. But I really do think that weapons wise and just cohesiveness with an offensive system that he is obviously very familiar with, run by Josh McDaniels, and Ziegler being the guy running the personnel coaching, the personnel decisions in the front office. I feel like that's probably the best place for him. He didn't turn the ball over a lot, right? He had the seventh best passing grade from PFF on the year. And this is despite the fact that he had like a million drops by his wide receivers. He threw the ball a lot too, obviously, but I don't know. I think I feel like with Davante Adams, Hunter Renfrow, Darren Waller, and maybe Josh Jacobs if he returns there, they all get huge boosts, and he would be pretty valuable as a fantasy QB if he went to Las Vegas.
Here's one. What about Tom Brady to the Jets, back to the AFC East?
Can you believe it? Oh God.
Oh, man.
I would throw up in my mouth. That's what would happen.
I think I just did.
Oh, boy. I love doing these because you can basically say anything you want about any player in terms of destination, but it's always fascinating to think about where players might go. Obviously, free agency opens after the Super Bowl, shortly after the Super Bowl, but we'll see if any major dominoes fall early on. Let's take a very quick break. When we come back, we'll chat with Haley McGoldrick from Sportsnet.ca. Check in on the dominoes that might fall in the NFL draft. I am curious to get Haley's take on the top prospects. She's a big Ohio State fan, so we'll check in with her on Smith and Jigba, and certainly CJ Stroud as well. But we'll check in with Haley McGoldrick from Sportsnet.ca next. You're listening to the Fantasy Show, Show and Matt, on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
This is the Fantasy Show with Show Ali and Matt Marchese on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Hour two of the Fantasy Show across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Show Ali, Matt Marchese here with you on a Sunday morning. Thanks for being alongside us. Good morning, Canada. Thanks for waking up with us. Reach the show anytime at 590-590. Name and location, please. That is the text line. You can tweet us as well at SNS Alley with two L's, at Maddie Mar 89 at The Fantasy Show on Twitter. Always happy to be joined by our next guest, Haley McGoldrick, writer for Sportsnet.ca, joining us here to chat some NFL draft here on a Sunday morning. Haley, how's it going today?
Good, thank you. How are you?
I am doing great. I appreciate you spending some time with us here early on a Sunday morning, so thank you for waking up for us. Look, I was telling this to Matt earlier as we discuss what to look forward to for the NFL draft when it comes, you know, when it comes in, what, end of April thereabouts? So it's still some time away, and I'm sure the rankings will change a little bit between now and then, but I remember going into the 2022 draft, we heard last year over and over and over that the wide receivers were something to look out for. And, like, you know, as we all know, lo and behold, a whole ton of them went in the first round. It was Drake London, Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave, Jameson Williams, Jahan Dotson, Treylon Burks. They all went in the first, I think, like 18 or 19 picks. And then you got, like, guys like George Pickens and Christian Watson going a little later on. And, like, virtually every one of them had impressive showings relative to their draft positions in year one of their NFL careers. So I want to ask you, like, what do you think, if wide receivers were the theme of last year's draft, what do you think the 2023 draft class is known for?
This is definitely a defensive-heavy draft. You're not going to have a lot of really exciting, you know, those big flashy wide receivers or running backs or anything like that in the first round here. There is a little bit of a quarterback battle. Obviously, there's CJ Stroud, Bryce Young, Will Levis, those kind of guys are up there, and they're kind of going to be the names that are going to headline this draft in the sense that the Texans need a quarterback, the Colts need a quarterback. There's a lot of teams who do need that position, but honestly, there's a lot of amazing defensive players who are going to be making headlines from this draft. And I mean, we even saw it last year, players like Sauce Gardner, they're really important to the teams they're going to be drafted to, and I think they don't get as much, you know, kind of excitement around their names just because defenders are defenders. They come to do a job, but they're not going to make those big plays the same way a quarterback or wide receiver will. But this is definitely a defensive heavy draft for good reason, because there's a lot of amazing defensive players available in this draft.
So you mentioned CJ Stroud and Bryce Young there, and they're expected to be, I mean, it would be a shock if they weren't the first two quarterbacks off the board. If you had to choose between one of the two, because, I mean, I think unless the Bears shockingly trade Justin Fields, which, I mean, wouldn't be the worst thing in the world for the future of their organization if they are going to take a quarterback, if it's going to be the Houston Texans, where would you lean? Because I know that a lot of people were really impressed with CJ Stroud's that game against Georgia in the college football playoff, and a lot of people thought that that was maybe the game that elevated him to be the first quarterback taken off the board.
Yeah, it's crazy to me that CJ Stroud's draft stock seemingly kept dropping throughout the season, despite the fact that when you saw him play, he was near perfect almost every single game. And I get it. You know, Ohio State, Michigan is the biggest game every single year. And he's lost to Michigan as a starting quarterback. And I understand that people look at that and say, okay, well, the biggest game of your career, you didn't get the W. But number one, wins aren't a quarterback stat, so it is what it is, and it's unfortunate for him, and I think from a pride standpoint, he would have wanted to win that game, but it doesn't make him any less of a quarterback, and also, like you said, he played a near-perfect game against Georgia as well on the biggest stage in college football. He looked amazing out there. And I think before that game, too, there's a lot of people saying, oh, he's a first-read quarterback. He's a one-read quarterback. He takes too long. He doesn't make accurate throws. And seeing in that game against one of the best defenses in the country, that was a one-point game. That game came down to a field goal expiring at the end of the game. And I think that says everything you need to know about a quarterback like that. And that's no shade to Bryce Young. Bryce Young is an amazing quarterback, too. He's played in really high-pressure situations in his career, won the Heisman last year. He's clearly an amazing quarterback. But I just think that with how the Texans play their football and how C.J. Stroud played in that game, he'd be a really good fit for that organization.
Chatting with Haley McGoldrick, writer for Sportsnet.ca here on the Fantasy Show. Show Ali, Matt Marchese here with you until the top of the hour. Okay, so I wanted to definitely stick on QBs with you. I do wonder, Haley, why do you think Ohio State, and I know you're an Ohio State expert, so I'm glad we have you on to chat with us about this. Why do you think Ohio State QBs, honestly, Alabama QBs, kind of. I feel like this is the notion has been dispelled because of guys like Tua and Jalen Hurts and maybe Mac Jones, I guess. But either way, why do you think these colleges are places that people kind of wave away when people talk about QB prospects? Like, not so much wide receiver prospects, not so much defensive end prospects, as we obviously know with the Bosa brothers, but why do you think QB specifically is the position where these two colleges, people kind of go, eh, and they kind of scoff at it?
I think the number one is because every quarterback is just surrounded by so much talent. It's insane. Like, you look at that Alabama National Championship winning roster with Mac Jones. I don't think Mac Jones was really the key in the ignition to that drive. It was everybody around him. And Ohio State's the exact same. Every single year, you've got a bunch of first-rounders. You've got double-digit guys going in all of these drafts. So the fact that they don't need the best quarterback in the world to be able to make these plays, I think, is number one. And you look at guys like Dwayne Haskins, J.T. Barrett, those kind of guys who made amazing careers at Ohio State. They broke so many records. And then they go to the NFL, nothing happens. J.T. Barrett was on practice squads, never really made it. Dwayne Haskins, obviously we know what happened in Washington, got a chance in Pittsburgh. Everything that happened with him is so tragic. But just kind of those kinds of things are why I think people don't take their quarterbacks super seriously. Same with even Mac Jones. I don't think Mac Jones has been put in an amazing position in New England. He doesn't have the world's top receivers. You could argue their offensive coordinator situation right now. But I think that's why people kind of look down on them, just because they don't need to be the best quarterback in the game, because schools like that just have so much talent around them that you could have a below-average quarterback, and when you have receivers like Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave, Marvin Harrison Jr., they're going to make those plays anyways.
Yeah, it's a good point, actually. And I am very curious to see next year in 2024, when the three of us have this conversation in a year's time, I'm excited to talk about Marvin Harrison Jr. with you, because he looks so much fun to watch. You know, it's funny you mentioned schools that have the recruiting capability essentially to be loaded at every position and not having to spend up, let's call it, too much on QB. I remember a number of years ago, this was like in 2007, 2008, 2009, thereabouts, but when Tim Tebow played for Florida, it was much the same. I mean, he was obviously very good as well, but you had all the other very talented players who played for the Gators, and now you have Florida QB Anthony Richardson. And I find this guy fascinating, because you look at his highlight reel, and it's his only season as a starter. It would probably, you'd be hard pressed, Haley, to find any other like tape of one single individual season where you don't go, wow, at basically every single play. But I still hear a lot of people describe him as a project when it comes to the NFL level. Where do you fall on the idea of Anthony Richardson being a project?
I can see it a little bit. I was saying to a friend, I haven't been sold on a Florida player in a few years, and that's excluding Kyle Pitts, because when you get drafted to Atlanta, there's not much you can do about that in your own situation. But there's been a very few Florida players who really stuck out to me. And granted, Florida plays in the SEC. It's a very hard conference. They've had a lot of coaching woes, like when they had Dan Mullen, and they fired Dan Mullen. They've gone through it a lot. The Florida program isn't Tim Tebow's Florida. It isn't prime Urban Meyer Florida. With that being said, he is 6'4". He's really big. He's got the physical tools, I think, to be able to be a great quarterback. Sometimes accuracy, I think, is the issue. But again, he's not going to be one of the first quarterbacks taken off the board. He's not going to somewhere where they're in desperate need of a quarterback. Even if he went somewhere like Carolina, obviously Carolina's situation is not amazing, but they do have a stable quarterback in the sense that the Colts can no longer rely on Matt Ryan. The Texans can no longer rely on Davis Mills. Sam Darnold, maybe we can give him a chance. I don't know. He's a free agent. We'll see what the Panthers are going to do there. But I don't think taking a risk there, if he's going to go to somewhere like the Panthers, again, they could trade up if the Bears want to trade back and they want to stay with Justin Fields. Obviously, we don't know what trades are going to happen. But I think that his size is what's really intriguing about him. But again, the accuracy is what scares people. And in the NFL, you need to be accurate. You're throwing against some of the best secondaries in the league. You can't just be hoping that somebody's going to catch it, whereas when you're playing a school like Vanderbilt, you have a little bit more leeway there.
So, Haley, there's one guy that really intrigues me, and I mean, I don't think that he's going to be drafted in the first round, although some teams may look at it and pull, you know, what the Ravens did with Lamar Jackson, maybe take him at the back end of the first round because you get that extra year on the contract. Hendon Hooker is the guy that I'm really intrigued by because he has a lot of tools. He really kind of turned things around at Tennessee this year, but then he tore his ACL against South Carolina, which is going to hurt his draft stock a little bit. Could you see him kind of sneaking into the back end of the first round for a team that, you know, I mean, it's a team that would probably trade up from the second round, much like the Ravens did to get into that back end spot. Could you see Hendon Hooker kind of getting himself into the back end of the first round as a bit of a project at quarterback?
I think so. I mean, I was really lucky enough that in October I got to go to Death Valley and go see LSU Tennessee. I was hoping for a really amazing SEC matchup. It was very much not that. Tennessee destroyed LSU. And he looked amazing. The throws he was making were so good. And he's so accurate. And again, like you said, this Tennessee team, the SEC is the hardest conference to play in college football. That does pain me to say as a very biased Big Ten lover. But it's true. And I think that the only concerns, yes, are the injury, but also his age. Like, he's 25 years old at this point, and not everybody is like Stetson Bennett and is out there winning championships at this old age of ours. But I think that he is a really amazing quarterback, but those are the concerns, right? Coming off injury number one, and, you know, you've seen players. You saw this year with Jameson Williams came off an injury, first reception he makes with the Lions and the touchdown. Like, it doesn't mean that just because you're injured, you're not going to be a good player. But I think that's the concern, is the age as well as the injury. That combined, people might want to take a younger quarterback, maybe wait till next year, see what's available if they're not in desperate need right now. Because after those top three quarterbacks, the drop-off is a little bit heavy versus 2 years ago when you had five quarterbacks going in the first 15 picks. So I really like Hendon Hooker, and I like his game, but I can see why those are concerns. I think if you're not in desperate need, you could take him on the back end, and it's not a huge risk as long as everything's okay in his recovery. I don't really think age is a giant concern, but again, if you could take a 22-year-old versus a 25-year-old, I can see why some teams might want to do that.
Yeah, it's a QB-driven league, as we know, Haley, so I think we're chances of seeing these guys go sooner rather than later are pretty good. We're chatting with Haley McGoldrick, writer for Sportsnet.ca. I wanted to ask you about the guy who is, I think by and large, Haley, and you can confirm this for me, but the guy who is largely considered the number one overall running back in this draft class, who is Texas running back Bijan Robinson, and you could probably make the argument that Robinson should be drafted with a top draft pick because of the sheer talent, right? Like, he is a big dude. He's super fast, has that rare elusiveness that top running backs usually have. A lot of power, runs with purpose, right? He's the kind of guy in fantasy you often refer to as a bell cow back. Like, you give him every single down and he is probably going to be your guy for a long time. He had, I think the numbers were like over 4,000 yards and over 40 touchdowns in just over 30 college games, which is pretty crazy. So there's like a real case to be made that Bijan Robinson is the best overall player in this entire draft. But I wonder, like, do you think we're past, just for good, the days of top draft picks being spent on running backs? Like, Matt and I were talking about Ezekiel Elliott and Saquon Barkley. Obviously, they were drafted pretty highly and relatively recently. But even like Clyde Edwards-Helaire was drafted at the end of the first round. And even just last year, we saw the best running back in the class and Breece Hall get taken, I think, in the second round, right? So it feels as though evaluators and general managers have come around on the idea of don't spend up for running backs.
Yeah, I definitely agree with the – it's not that I agree with the don't spend up, but I can see why. I mean, you look at Breece Hall, an amazing player, so good, game changer for the Jets, gets hurt. And that's what happens with running backs. When your usage is just so high, they end up getting hurt. Look at Clyde Edwards-Helaire. He got hurt this year. I think that's the reason why people aren't spending a top five draft pick anymore. I mean, trust me, when Zeke went in the top five, I was elated. That was amazing. I will never forget that draft with Joey Bosa and – all of those guys. That was an amazing draft as an Ohio State fan. But I just think, again, when they're being used that much, it's not worth spending such a high draft pick on it when you are risking injury. And somebody like Bijan, last year, he was a Heisman front runner until he got hurt. And I think that's a concern, too. He's already been hurt a little bit in his college career. Why are you going to spend a top 10, top 15 draft pick on him when he might get hurt again? But he is an incredible player. He definitely changed that Texas program. And we've seen it, that Texas program has been going through it a little bit in the last couple of years. They're waiting now for Arch Manning to kind of be their savior. But he really ran the offense. Him and Xavier Worthy were really their two top players, especially when they didn't have a really stable quarterback situation. Bijan ran that offense. And I think he's an incredible player. But with the injury history, with just how much when running backs get used, they get injured, I just don't think it's worth it to spend so high on that draft pick.
All right, we talked a lot about the wide receiver class from last year and how good it was. Now, this year, you look at Quentin Johnson from TCU is one of those guys that is – he's probably the first wide receiver off the board. But for me, the guy that stands out as the one that probably should be the first off the board is Jaxon Smith-Njigba, because he has the profile. You know, you talk about Ohio State and receivers. He outperformed some guys that were drafted in the first round, and he's been a really good player at Ohio State. Now, granted, he's coming off of the injury, but maybe not the same to the same degree. Ja'Marr Chase didn't play. He was fine. Ja'Marr Chase worked out really well. Could we see that with Smith-Njigba this year as well?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that people don't realize that he sat out a little longer than I think he had to, because he knew that otherwise it was going to hurt his draft stock and he didn't want to go out there and get hurt again. I think he did want to be out there in that Georgia game, but he just knew his future was important. It's the same. You look a few years back when Nick Bosa suffered that abdominal injury against TCU. He didn't play the rest of the season. Could he have come back? Probably. You don't want to hurt your draft stock. Look at Nick Bosa now. I think Jaxon Smith-Njigba is amazing. There is a reason why he led the Power 5 in receiving yards last year. He's an incredible receiver. And I think, too, with this year, with just the surge of Marvin Harrison Jr., people kind of forgot how amazing Jaxon Smith-Njigba still is as a player. And again, there's not too many teams who are in desperate need of a wide receiver right now. So I think that's why he's kind of fallen down. There are a lot of defensive holes that need to be filled on a lot of teams, so you're not really going to take that risk. But he's an incredible player. Just the catches he makes alone are insane. He's incredibly fast. He's a very versatile receiver. And I think if somebody has the pick and has the room to draft him, they absolutely should, because it's going to pay off for him. And, I mean, you look at Ohio State wide receivers. They're amazing players. You look at Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson. They were kind of a 1A, 1B last year. And people kept saying, you know, oh, which one should go first? If you look and on their respective teams, they both did amazing because they're both amazing players. And Jaxon Smith-Njigba was right up there with those two guys last year. So I think it says a lot that he's a receiver who was playing with receivers of that caliber. Unfortunately, he did suffer that injury. Probably could have come back. Didn't want to hurt his draft stock, but if somebody has the room to draft him, they absolutely should.
Yeah, I am fascinated to see what his draft position ends up as, because you look at guys like Drake London and Olave and Jameson Williams, Garrett Wilson, so on and so forth, all very, very talented receivers. You could probably, and I've heard a lot of people say this, including you, Haley, that you could probably stack up Smith and Jigba with a lot of those guys. So if people feel as though they can get a bargain with him, I wonder if they maybe wait until like later in the first round. Maybe you see people trade back in to grab a guy like Smith and Jigba. If he doesn't go in the first round, I'll say this. I'll be very surprised. Before we let you run, I think the top wideouts this year are guys like, oh, Marchese mentioned Quentin Johnson from TCU. We've just talked about Jackson Smith and Jigba from Ohio State. You got Jordan Addison from USC, and I think probably also Boston College's Zay Flowers. Is there another wide receiver that I'm forgetting? Like, if you had to round out your top five, is there another name you'd add to that list?
No, I think you've got it covered. Honestly, there weren't a lot of wide receivers who were really eye-popping this year. Zay Flowers was the one that I think was super underrated just because, again, he went to Boston College, goes and plays in the ACC. We know that the ACC pretty much runs through Clemson. There was that year with Pitt when Kenny Pickett was there, but I don't think you're going to see a lot of big names come out of a school like Boston College, but I think Zay Flowers is amazing and he's really underrated, and I really like his game. He is somebody who I think could shock people and go in the first round. Like you said, Jordan Addison is really amazing. USC is one of those teams that always makes me laugh because the Pac-12 should run through them and they somehow find a way to fumble it every single year. But him with Caleb Williams was really amazing. So I think that he dealt with some injuries at USC, and that's why people might want to pass on him. That's the biggest thing with this wide receiver class, I think. Other than Quentin Johnson, some of them, they either went to a low-profile school or they were dealing with some injuries. So there's not, like, a big-name wide receiver the same way there was last draft when it was kind of headed in wide receivers. But I think those are pretty much the big names. There's not really anybody on my list who stands out to me like, this is a sleeper pick, you should pick up this guy.
Just because you mentioned him, Haley, I know I was going to let you go, but just because you mentioned it, I'm curious. When we get to 2024, do you think Caleb Williams is the presumptive number one overall pick?
I think, well, it depends on the situation, but honestly, I think if there's a team that needs a receiver, it should be Marvin Harrison Jr. He is, okay, without a doubt, the best player in the draft. And maybe people are going to say I'm crazy because why would a wide receiver go number one overall? And I get that. But unless somebody's in dire need of a quarterback, and we've seen so many quarterbacks go in the last few years, and again, we don't know any situation. Maybe the Bears do choose to move on from Justin Fields after next year, depending on what happens. Then, of course, Caleb Williams is going to probably go number one. He's an amazing player. There's a reason he won the Heisman. Also, there is a lot of talent on that USC team. When Lincoln Riley went there, a lot of people followed. But I think he is an amazing quarterback. But I just, again, I know I'm biased, but I, without a doubt, think that Marvin Harrison Jr. is easily the best player in next year's draft. If he stays healthy, again, we don't really know the situation after that injury in the Georgia game, but he's just so incredible that I think if a team needs a receiver, they really want to get their hands on him as soon as they can.
Yeah, hey, look, if Marvin Harrison Jr. goes number one overall next year, I think every NFL, anyone who's watched the NFL in the past, like, 15 years is going to lose their minds because of who his dad is. And by the name, we know who that is. Haley, we appreciate you spending some time with us here on a Sunday morning here on the Fantasy Show. This was a lot of fun, and hopefully we can do it again soon, closer to the draft.
Thank you so much for having me.
There she goes, Haley McGoldrick from Sportsnet.ca. You can find her great work on college football and certainly the WNBA as well on Sportsnet.ca. Yeah, look, I am fascinated, Matt, to see of the teams in the first round, because we know Seattle is pretty high up there. Do they draft a QB? We know the Lions are pretty high up there. They've said they're like more or less married to Jared Goff for now at least, but still, could they draft a QB? They absolutely could. Philly even is pretty high up there. Like, Philly has a real chance to play in the Super Bowl in a couple of weeks after today's game, and they are going to be picking 10th overall because of the trade with New Orleans. So I'm so fascinated to see what decisions are made. Obviously, QBs rule supreme in the NFL, so the QB decisions with Chicago, with Houston, with Arizona, I would imagine to a certain degree, certainly Indy, and you go down the list, there's more, right? Atlanta, Carolina. But once those decisions are made, I have a feeling someone is – we didn't talk about defensive players because, like I mentioned, we're doing this for fantasy purposes. So we're focusing on offensive players. But given the sheer amount of defensive players that are going to go in the top end of this NFL draft, someone's getting a wide receiver or a tight end or a running back at insane value in the first – or the first round or, like, middle of the second round, I'd say.
Yeah, 100%. Like, you know, like, in any other year – Jackson Smith and Jigba would be drafted as like a top 15 player, top 10 player. Like, he's that good. You look at where Garrett Wilson went last year. Look at where Chris Olave went last year. And he outperformed those guys when they were at Ohio State. Like, he's that good. And so I think that somebody's going to get value there. He probably goes outside the top 15. That's my guess. Like, Bijan Robinson. I know that the running back position is one that is very volatile, whatever. But if Bijan Robinson goes late in the first round, which we anticipate he will, what does that mean for the value of a guy like Jahmyr Gibbs?
Yeah.
He was really good at Alabama and profiles as, you know, he kind of reminds me of like an Alvin Kamara type.
Sure.
Very good as a pass catcher. He's a very upright runner, much like Alvin Kamara is. And he's very explosive. So I think when you look at this draft, you look at how many good defensive players there are. I think you're right. Like, teams like, you know, for example, you know, the Buffalo Bills, if they want to draft a wide receiver, they're going to be able to get somebody that's better than their draft capital would suggest. You look at, like, you know, the guy that's really interesting for me, show, is Michael Mayer, tight end out of Notre Dame. And some people have him as high as a top 15 pick. Now, we know that tight ends, generally speaking, take a lot longer to develop. Like, usually by year three, we see these guys really take a step forward. Like, look at TJ Hawkinson. TJ Hawkinson was taken very high by the Detroit Lions, and he was good with the Lions, but he really blew up this year and more specifically after the trade to Minnesota. So I wonder about tight ends in that spot. And when you're taking guys like that, that means you're pushing other guys down the board. And we all know there's this – everybody wants to draft the next great quarterback. Like, a guy like Anthony Richardson's skill set probably doesn't deem him to be a first-round pick, but because of the need at the position, it's going to push him up the board, meaning somebody else is getting pushed down. So I think it's a really fascinating conversation. I think there are some really good wide receivers in this class, but the fact that there's so many good defensive players is going to push some good offensive players far down the board here.
Yeah, like, I think there's a really good chance that, and again, you can never, it's more or less impossible to predict trades, right? Because there will be many trades that happen in the first round. I can promise you that. Miami, they had to forfeit a pick in the first round. I don't think the 49ers have a pick in the first round either. I think the pick that would be, let's say they lose today, so the pick that would in theory be the 30th overall pick would be going to Denver, I believe. So it's just, there are a lot of teams that have traded out already, that have traded up already because of previous trades. So there will be more trades to come, but let's just assume for the sake of this conversation no more trades do come. I have a feeling there's a real possibility, as much as Bryce Young and CJ Stroud will probably be the first two QBs off the board, that if you look at the top five teams that probably are not going to take a QB in Chicago, Arizona, and Seattle at 1, 3, and 5, there's a real chance they all take defensive players. Like, there's a chance that Houston doesn't have to trade up and they can still take their pick of Bryce Young or CJ Stroud. And it'll be interesting to see what the ripple effect that has, certainly just fantasy-wise for the Houston Texans, but what it looks like going forward for other teams as well. Because, like you said, guys like Zay Flowers, like, where does he get taken? I would love, from a fantasy perspective, to see Zay Flowers go play for the Packers, for example, at number 15, or go play for the Patriots at number 14. Or, I mean, I don't want to see any more wide receivers go to Pittsburgh, because frankly have had enough of that. Okay, enough. They got George Pickens. That's enough for me. But, you know, if DJ Chark, like you were saying earlier, does move on, and the Lions feel like they are not taking a QB with either of their first-round picks, maybe with their 18th overall pick, they take someone like Jackson Smith and Jigba, right? Like, it just, there's a lot of possibilities here that would have ripple effects in fantasy football, and certainly in real life as well. So looking forward to that, and we will continue to cover all of the NFL draft prospect coverage Between now and, well, certainly the next couple of weeks, but certainly on sportsnet.ca with Haley's great work. We'll cover that right up until the end of April and the NFL draft. Let's take a very quick break, Marchese, and when we come back, we will take a look at 49ers, Eagles, and Bengals, Chiefs, the AFC, NFC championship games that are going to take place a little later on today. You can reach the show anytime as well if you want to weigh in on anything we've discussed at 590-590, name and location. You're listening to the Fantasy Show, Show and Matt, on the Sportsnet Radio Network. One more segment to go on the Fantasy Show across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Show Ali, Matt Marchese here with you until the top of the hour. You can reach the show anytime, 590-590, name and location, please. That's the text line. You can tweet us as well, at SNS Alley with two L's, at MattyMar89, at The Fantasy Show. Appreciate you all being alongside us. Just another reminder that The Fantasy Show does go to 1 hour starting next weekend for the next couple of weekends, and then we are off until the summer following the Super Bowl. But, Matt, before we get into the AFC NFC Championship games, I mentioned Inside the Lines is next, of course, with Cam Stewart, David Bastel, and the incomparable George Rusick. What are the chances that Rusick talks about Novak Djokovic winning the Australian Open? What are the chances? Pretty high?
I think I would go with pretty high is probably not high enough. How about that?
Yeah, I don't know what the odds are of George mentioning that Novak Djokovic won the Australian Open in the first 5 minutes, but definitely in the first set. Austin, make sure you mention that to George. Make sure he knows there. We're wondering if he mentions the Novak Djokovic winning the Australian Open. 10 titles for Novak Djokovic. I am far be it from me to be like the tennis expert here, but that's wild stuff. I think it was something like since 2011 or something. Since he was 31, he has won like 10 of the last 16 majors. It's something insane like that. So hey, kudos for old Novak. Okay, let's talk about the championship games this weekend, Matt. Let's start with the NFC championship game, because I believe that's the first one. I think that one's at 3 Eastern, and Bengals-Chiefs is at 6:30 Eastern. But 49ers-Eagles, again, like before, I think really the key to this game is just, can Brock Purdy not turn the ball over? And it's not he's not a turnover machine. That doesn't mean to say that I think he turns the ball over a lot. He really doesn't. It's just, if you're the third string quarterback in the last pick of the draft, there's not a lot that's expected of you. So it does kind of feel like the 49ers are playing with house money and some found money as well. But after a tough loss, after a muffed interception in the NFC Championship game last year, it feels as though, even though they are playing with, again, house money here, that if they don't win because of the performance of Purdy and because of how the defense has played and how Christian McCaffrey has looked in his games since becoming a San Francisco 49er, it would just be kind of a disappointment. Having said that, it's going to be hard to win in Philadelphia in front of what is arguably one of the most hostile fan bases in the entire NFL.
Well, like you mentioned, it's going to be about managing the football, right? And I know that's a very simplistic way to look at it, but if you believe, like if the Niners believe, and I think they do, that their defense is good enough to shut down Jalen Hurts and the rest of the Eagles offense, then Brock Purdy just has to not turn the ball over, get the ball to Christian McCaffrey, get the ball in the hands of the playmakers, and just don't make a mistake. It means if you're going to get sacked, you better hold on to the ball. Don't try and play hero ball and throw into windows that are too tight. Like, all those things are very obvious, but that's how good the Niners are. It's a very obvious game plan for them to have success against the Eagles here. And they need to be able to run the football today, whether it be with Christian McCaffrey or with Elijah Mitchell, because that's going to open up the play action game for Brock Purdy. Now, on the flip side with the Eagles, this is a big test for Jalen Hurts here. Jalen Hurts has had an incredible season. We talked about, you know, we weren't 100% certain that Jalen Hurts at the beginning of this year was the locked in starter for next year. I think that has all been put to bed, as he is very much in the MVP conversation this year. But like that, the regular season is great. Beating the Giants, who weren't very good to begin with, is fine. But now you've got a real test. Now you've got to step up. You know, this is a game. These types of games is why they went out and traded for AJ Brown. It's why they drafted Devontae Smith. You know, it's why they have such a good offensive line and why they've built it as such. I think the biggest test here is going to be, because I don't worry about the Eagles defense because they're really good, but I want to see what Jalen Hurts does against this Niners defense. That's the key here, because I think it's going to be a super interesting matchup. Like, if Jalen Hurts ends up going out and having a great game, like, are we let's talk about him from a fantasy perspective. He's already going as a top five quarterback next year. That we know. Jalen Hurts potentially be the number one quarterback off the board next year.
It's not an insane idea. Like, I mean, if you're gonna tell me you're gonna go with Patrick Mahomes or you're going with Josh Allen or something, then I'm not gonna argue too heavily. But if you're saying, hey, you know what, I'm going with Jalen Hurts, I'm not gonna talk you out of it, because he has been electric basically all season, right?
Yeah, he has been, and he has the weapons. What ends up happening with the running game, I don't know, but he's proven to be one of the more impactful players across the NFL, and this is a game where he can show, hey, I'm here and I'm here to stay. And I wonder about a guy like Miles Sanders, if they can get the running game going against what has been a very stout Niners run defense, then I think all bets are off for the Niners. Like, if they cannot stop the run, they are in deep, deep trouble today.
I think you're spot on with Jalen Hurts, because the 49ers have a great defense. That's not a hot take. It's not new news by any means, but they still struggle against opposing wide receivers. And we just saw, I mentioned it earlier off the top of the show, but we just saw last week CeeDee Lamb with over 100 yards and 10 catches against the 49ers pass defense. And like, if you're filling out a DFS lineup and you're trying to figure out today who you want to take as your QB, I would be hard pressed to go with any of the other three QBs. And I know Burrow, Purdy, and Mahomes, especially Mahomes, have great value, but with the ankle injury for Mahomes, Burrow on the road, Purdy being a rookie in a hostile environment as well, even at $7,200 bucks on DraftKings, I honestly really do think that Jalen Hurts is the guy you want, because he does not have to do as much as Burrow, Purdy, Mahomes to get to that value price tag wise, right? And then if you just talk about a general fantasy look at Hurts, like you said, the rushing touchdown upside, just the rushing upside in general, is so high that, I don't know, it's just hard. It's hard for him not to achieve his value most weeks, even if he is throwing for like 180 yards or like 215 yards through the air, because if he doesn't turn it over, honestly, it doesn't matter. And yeah, the DraftKings price, he's probably like $1,000 too cheap to not pick him. You know, from that other game, from a fantasy perspective, the guy I'm looking at, I just mentioned the Eagles side. On the 49ers side of things, I think Deebo Samuel is the guy I'm really looking forward to seeing how they cover in this game, if only because Deebo Samuel is just, again, he kind of reminds me of like A.J. Brown when A.J. Brown was on the Titans. He's just so efficient with the touches he gets. And again, obviously with Christian McCaffrey taking up a lot more touches since becoming a 49er, everyone else has taken not a back seat, but like things have become a little more rounded instead of one guy getting all the targets. Deebo Samuel looks a lot healthier now, and we saw him just, what, 2 weeks ago against the Seahawks, he took a pass like 70-something yards to the house, and it was a short little nothing pass that he just burns eight dudes for. So I'm very much looking forward to seeing how the Eagles try and bottle up all of Samuel, Ayuk, Kittle, and McCaffrey.
It's very true. And the one thing, and this is what we talked about. So, you know, when we talked about the Bills earlier and trying to negate a pass rush, what's the best way to do it? Get the ball out of your hands quickly. If there's anybody that can really thrive on yards after contact, or yards after catch, and yards after contact for that matter as well.
Yeah.
that guy is Deebo Samuel, is it not? Like that. So that's where I wonder about about how the offensive game plan goes with Brock Purdy and how quickly they want to get the ball out of his hands and into the hands of guys like Ayuk and Kittle and specifically Deebo Samuel. I think that Deebo Samuel ends up having a good game. He spent a lot of time on the sidelines this year because he was hurt. We talked about, you know, you just mentioned it, how, you know, the fighting for touches, especially after Christian McCaffrey got there, has been a little bit of a task. But in this type of a game with a pass rush that's as good as the Eagles, I do wonder about how involved Deebo Samuel gets in this game. And I have a feeling it's going to be a lot.
Yeah, he's $5,700 on DraftKings. And, you know, you look at Brandon Ayuk, for example, who is $1,300 less than Samuel, $4,400 for Ayuk. I'd rather pay up $1,300 to get Samuel in such a lineup. I wanted to get to him a couple minutes left here, so why don't we get to Bengals Chiefs? You know, I was going to talk a little bit about George Kittle for the 49ers, but suffice to say the 5-second version is George Kittle good, and Brock Purdy likes to throw to him. I'm curious to see how. Yeah, he makes like impossible catches look routine, as we saw last week. So I am curious to see how the tight ends get covered for both, honestly, for both Kittle and for Dallas Goedert, for that matter. But on the Chiefs Bengals side of this matchup, I think my favorite play, and I know this is the chalk pick, it 1,000% is, but Ja'Marr Chase and how he performs against the Kansas City Chiefs pass defense. I mean, he is just the best wide receiver in this game, period. Like, that's no knock against any of the wide receivers who play for the Chiefs, and it's not really a knock against T. Higgins, who would be a wide receiver one on many teams anyways, or even Tyler Boyd, really, for that matter, who would be probably a wide receiver two on many teams. But Ja'Marr Chase is the best receiver play, period, maybe even on the entire day, given the matchup, because, and there's no disrespect to A.J. Brown in the other game, but You look at how the Bengals used their game plan. Even when they went against the Bills last week and they were up big, they were going run heavy over and over and over again. Chase still, outside of those games, has received 12 or more targets in 5 of the past 6 games. Like, no one else, generally speaking, gets that kind of volume. It's pretty crazy. I think the total of this game has gone up a little bit over the last couple of days in terms of odds-wise. So I think with that kind of elite volume and even the price point on DraftKings at $7,600, I mean, Ja'Marr Chase, not a bad play, especially going up against a KC defense that gives up a ton of points to opposing wideouts. I think they've allowed the second most receiving touchdowns in the entire year.
Well, and I was just going to say, like, if there was a wager that I was going to place, it would probably be that Ja'Marr Chase is going to get into the end zone today.
Yeah,
so from
probably
a fantasy perspective, that's usually pretty good. Listen, I think that this game is going to be high scoring. I totally agree. I know that Patrick Mahomes is still banged up, but if Patrick Mahomes is even at 70%, he's better than 70% of the quarterbacks in the NFL. Like, that's just, there's no question about that. And Andy Reid is a smart guy. So I think that Ja'Marr Chase is just going to be involved in this game because it's going to be close. It's not going to be a blowout. It's going to be, you know, the Bengals are going to still have to maintain their game plan, which is get the ball into the hands of Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins in order to stay in this game. Listen, Ja'Marr Chase, do you remember the conversations that were being had about Ja'Marr Chase prior to last year about, oh, he can't see the ball, he's right, got a lot of drops, and then Ja'Marr Chase just goes out and is absolutely incredible. Unsurprising, because he was that guy at LSU with Joe Burrow as his quarterback. And, you know, I think that Ja'Marr Chase is one of those players that anytime the ball is in his hand, something very good can happen. And I believe that we're going to see that again today. I would not be stunned to see Ja'Marr Chase with, like, you know, 8 catches for 100 yards and 2 touchdowns. That would probably be one of the least surprising things on the day, actually.
Yeah, hey, I mean, probably, in all honesty. And he is priced accordingly, because I think a lot of people know what we just talked about, which is that he is the best receiver play in this game. So $7,600 on DraftKings is a little pricey, but, I mean, you're also probably going to be getting a lot of return for your investment in such a lineup. Let me ask you this before we go, Matt. Travis Kelce, obviously keeps making us realize that the Chiefs are not – there are no secrets for the Chiefs offense. It's get the ball to Travis Kelce on first down. It's get the ball to Travis Kelce on second down. It's get the ball to Travis Kelce on third down. And if they go for it on fourth down, it's probably get the ball to Travis Kelce, right? So
yes.
If that's the case, like, do you – $7,800 on DraftKings, would that – is that too high a price to dissuade you from putting him in your lineup?
Not if he puts up double-digit catches again. I mean, like – I know hindsight's always 20/20, but if Patrick Mahomes' ankle is as bad as we think it is, that's a lot of short yardage passage. That's going to be Travis Kelce's bread and butter. Like, I would not be stunned to see Travis Kelce with another, you know, 8 to 10 catches this week.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it again. He had what, 14 catches for 98 yards and a pair of touchdowns against the Jags. So the Chiefs do not try and get cute in the postseason. So knowing that Kelce is going to be the focal point of this offense and like probably get 10-plus targets this week, I think you can safely put him in your DraftKings lineup. Safe to say, we will be back next week as well. Again, don't forget, Fantasy Show going to be 1 hour next week and the morning of the Super Bowl, but you can always reach the show anytime at 590-590, name and location. That is the People's Text Line. Hey, enjoy all the football today. Enjoy George's takes on Novak Djokovic. He is next with Inside the Lines. You've been listening to The Fantasy Show. Show Ali and Matt Marchese with you across the Sportsnet Radio Network.